Welcome to the Gold Standard podcast here on the 440 Sports Network. My name is not Braden Gall. It's Emma Lingen, and you can find me on Twitter at Emma_Lingen.
And I'm Michael Gallagher with Nashville Hockey Now. You can follow me on Twitter at MGSports_.
So our fearless leader, Braden, is on a much-deserved vacation this week, but we are holding down the fort here. We've got a lot to talk about when it comes to the Predators and the trade deadline and the 12-game point streak that's still alive crazily. So we're just going to jump right into it. First, with the trade deadline, because a lot happened, I think, and we definitely need to break it down. Michael, I kind of want to get your thoughts on just kind of overall how the Preds did at the trade deadline. Did they do enough? Did they not do enough? Were there things they should have done that they didn't? Just kind of want to get your thoughts.
Yeah, I don't think Barry Trotz did too much, which I was pleasantly surprised. I figured there would be a bigger move. I guess the biggest move was trading Yakov Trenin to Colorado. That kind of surprised me a little bit, shipping off a very valuable, you know, depth forward bottom six piece to a division rival. But Colorado is in win now mode. The Predators aren't. So I guess if there's a time to make that move, now is it. The Jason Zucker move really kind of, it didn't really surprise me, but I thought it was an underrated move. And I know that Yakov Trenin fans weren't happy about that because you basically are swapping out one depth forward for another. But I feel like adding Zucker was something that kind of needed to happen, I guess, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, to bolster Nashville's chances in the playoffs. They're going to get one of the top two seeds if they finish in the wild card spot. So you're going to have a very tough first round in the playoffs. But Zucker is someone who's played in the middle six. I think he's been in the top six here and there, 4 or 5 time 20 goal scorer. I feel like he adds a scoring punch to the bottom six that the Predators have really been lacking. And up until they went on this recent win streak after the All-Star break, it was kind of the main thing everyone was talking about is like, where's the depth scoring going to come from? Trenin had 10 goals, I believe, before they ended up shipping him out. And I feel like Zucker is someone who's a little bit underrated. I think he's someone that can move up and down. I don't think he's just relegated to the bottom six. I think if you need someone, and we saw him play on the second line, actually, you need someone to move up and down the lineup. He's kind of your guy. I really like the move to bring in Jeremy Hansel. I feel like he's someone who kind of got overlooked and written off just because he was a little bit older, passed up in the draft twice. He's 21. I believe he's going to be 22 soon. And that kind of intrigued me because Colorado signed him to an entry-level contract and then hours later ended up trading him to Nashville. But I think he's someone that can really kind of help bolster the defensive pipeline a little bit. We saw Spencer Stastny got called up today. I think Hansel's someone that can, he's in his overage year in the junior leagues, but I think he's someone who can really go and make an impact in Milwaukee next year because we expect Stastny, maybe Delgado to be in the NHL. And I feel like the Predators really kind of solidified their depth. You know, what was the point of Barry Trotz and David Poile stockpiling all these draft picks if they weren't going to use them? So I think they shored up a couple of areas of need. They didn't really do too much. I think Trotz had a really good deadline.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think, you know, before the deadline, when Trotz came out and said, we're leaning towards being buyers now, I think we all thought, oh God, no, because usually buyer means you're going to add some big names, expensive pieces, maybe big contracts that'll require you to give up a lot and then have to really mess with the roster a lot. And I think a lot of us heard buyer and thought, oh no, like, please don't do that. And I think a lot of us, or at least I, sort of overlooked the possibility of him doing what he did, which is adding short-term, low-risk contracts, you know, guys that are on expiring deals who have playoff experience, who have that pedigree, who can come in and help this team just in case they do get hot and go on a little run here in the playoffs. And then beyond that, you're under no obligation to keep them. And so as far as the Trenin move, you know, I think it makes sense. I really didn't see him being on the roster after this season, and he was going to be a unrestricted free agent, so might as well get something for him now instead of letting him walk in free agency. I think, like you mentioned, Colorado is in win now mode. They're also dealing with a lot of injuries on that roster right now. They just lost Logan O'Connor for the season. I think he is a guy, I think Trennan is a guy who can bring a lot of physicality, obviously, and he can really help with their bottom six. I think they really need someone like that right now. You talk about exchanging one depth forward for another with him and Zucker, or him and Beauvillier, for example. Yes, but you have to look at what kind of depth forward they are, right? Because Yak is kind of a big bruiser kind of guy. And I mean, yes, he has a scoring touch, but he's been kind of inconsistent with that. And he doesn't have the playoff experience necessarily that the Preds are looking for. And so I think they got, yes, more depth forwards, but really what they got was more depth scoring, theoretically. So I think that that's something that they've obviously needed. As far as, you know, getting Hanzel back, I agree. I think that was a great move, like great pickup for them for down in Milwaukee. If you look at his numbers through the WHL, every season he's been in junior, his numbers have steadily increased, and that's exactly what you want to see. And I think if you're looking at, like you said, you want to use those draft picks and get something. And, you know, now they're, this is the kind of thing with, and we've talked about this, and you mentioned that he's a young guy under team control for the next 3 years. Has that not been what we've been saying the Preds should be looking for at the, you know, at the trade deadline? And I think this is good. I think it's good for them. You know, is he going to be in the NHL next year? Probably not, but that's okay. Like it's a good move for the future. So it shows me that this team and Trotz, they were looking with an eye to the future, and they weren't willing to sacrifice too much in the present to, you know, at the expense of the team's future, which brings me to my next point. You know, we talked about the guys that they did add, which also includes, by the way, Jared Anderson Dolan, picked up from Los Angeles on the waiver wire, because Barry Trotz loves the waiver wire. We still haven't seen him play yet, but we'll see, you know, what he can bring potentially. But
if you play for the Kings and you're put on waivers, there's a good chance Barry Trotz is going to claim you.
Exactly. But if, you know, if it doesn't work out, you go back on waivers, the Kings will take you back, and then you'll go lead the AHL in goals, because that is what's happening with Sammy Fagimo right now. But that's okay. So we'll look at, instead of, you know, this is what the Preds did do. We talked about that. Let's talk about what they didn't do. The one trade that we all knew was going to happen, the one that we all said, this is for sure happening. If nothing else, this is going to happen. We were all sure, probably would have put money down, that Tyson Barrie was not going to be with this team after the trade deadline. And guess who's still with the team after the trade deadline? Tyson Barrie. So I have some thoughts on that, you know, as far as what happened, why it didn't work. Barry Trotz did sort of address that at his press conference after the trade deadline. But Mike, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think out of all the moves that didn't happen, that one's probably surprised me the most. I mean, we're talking about Barry's been traded. I lost track of how many times he's been healthy scratch, but it's north of 30. I mean, he's played in 35 games this year. And I feel like we don't know exactly why the relationship soured. We don't know what happened. If it's just Barry thought he was going to get more power play time, if he thought he was going to be in a top four role, we're not really sure what's going on, but there was a disconnect. There was some sort of division between him and Barry Trotz. And then of course his agent probably goes out there and broadcasts to the world, at least to Elliot Friedman, who then broadcasted to the world that he wanted to trade. Trotz was unhappy, put Barry kind of on blast a little bit on 102.5 The Game, saying he was unhappy with how that situation happened. And Barry Trotz is not afraid to give a little bit more information than he probably should. And that was something that I felt like he would have played close to the vest, but he went out there and was like, yeah, we're disappointed in how Tyson handled this. Yeah, we didn't want the story to get out there.
Barry Trotz has never given a short answer to anything. So you're right with ever. That.
Yeah. And the fact that he didn't, Barry Trotz has a very fine way of skating around and avoiding questions he doesn't want to answer. And if he doesn't want to answer a question, usually he'll give you a 5-minute long-winded version of something that has nothing to do with the question he doesn't want to answer. But when Jared asked him that question, he was like, yeah, we're very disappointed this happened. And it became this big public blow up. And sure, we probably made more out of it than it actually was. But it was known that Tyson Berry wanted out. It was known that Barry Trotz was shopping him. Barry Trotz, I mean, he even admitted, he's like, yeah, I've talked to a handful of teams and it's just the salary doesn't work out. So maybe it's a deal closer to the deadline and it actually doesn't end up happening. Now you just kind of wonder, what are you just going to sit him for the rest of the year? I can't imagine someone who's as valuable as he is. Like, even if he is unhappy, I feel like Tyson Berry's kind of handled the situation pretty well. I feel like it was more his agent leaking the story than it was him. And he's just kind of been like, yo, I just kind of want to put my head down, get through this, and then we'll see what happens at the end of the year. He's a very valuable player. He can still quarterback your second power play unit. He's still someone who I feel like can put up points. I feel like he's someone who's I mean, come on. If you're sitting there and you're like Luke Shen, Tyson Berry, who do I start in a playoff game? I'm going to go with Tyson Berry. I'm sorry. No disrespect to Luke Shen. Berry's still a very valuable piece, and I would hate to see him ride the bench just because they sign Luke Shen to a contract or because they feel like they can't break up a certain defensive pairing. I feel like at this point, he's someone you've got to, he's on the roster. He's not traded. He's someone you've got to get into the lineup. He's too valuable of a player to keep healthy scratching, in my opinion.
I agree. And I think, you know, in theory, the fact that they healthy scratched him so much probably didn't help his trade value because he hadn't been playing. No one could watch him. And it's not to say that he doesn't have a body of work already, which he certainly does. But I mean, if you look at what he's done in his career, you look at what he did last season coming in at the trade deadline to Nashville and then basically becoming a leader. I think, I don't know how many games it took for him to be wearing an A because all the veterans had either been traded or injured. And he was a huge part of that team's little stretch run last season. And I think you're right on the money in that I think Trotz was absolutely more upset with his agent leaking the story than with Tyson, because I think Trotz said at one point that it was something like maybe four people total knew about those conversations they were having. And so it was a very small group. And so I think he was, you know, he was a little upset that it felt kind of like dirty laundry being aired. And that, I think, you know, I'm sure upset him, which puts Tyson in an uncomfortable position. But I think that I agree with you. I think Tyson's a very valuable player. I would much rather have him in the lineup than Luke Shen, to be honest, because, I mean, especially you put Luke Shen and Ryan McDonough on a pair together, which they have been for a while. I mean, it's kind of two of the same type of defensemen, except that McDonough's a lot better. And so I think if you at least balance McDonough out with Barry, you get a little offensive touch there. And we saw that a little bit last year, too. So it is unfortunate. You know, the irony of all of this is I feel like Barry would be a great addition if there was a team that was looking to do what Barry Trotz was doing at the deadline and add guys who have experience, who, you know, have leadership and have value, can add scoring, but they're on expiring contracts. So that's the irony of all of this. Not that obviously the Predators are not lacking in defensemen, so that maybe is the issue there. But I mean, if you're looking for a guy who can make an impact while on an expiring contract, I mean, that's Tyson Berry. So it is a little, it's unfortunate, but you know, going back to what Trotz had said on 102.5 about, you know, him being disappointed, and then fast forward to trade deadline day in his press conference, he did address the situation and he didn't say much about the agent, which I think that is maybe his way of kind of walking back what he said a little bit and being, you know, he was extremely complimentary of Tyson. And I don't think he's going to go and put Tyson Berry on blast, you know, in his press conference, especially now that he's still with the team for the rest of the year. But I think he didn't have to say all that he did about how great Tyson's handled it, what a great teammate he's been, how hard he's worked, how he has that next man up mentality. I happen to know, you know, in the room, at least the guys love him. We had to do something back when I was still working for the Predators. I helped out with making the team yearbook, and we had to ask all these guys all these little questions, like if you were an animal, what would you be? And just dumb stuff like that. But one of the questions I remember was, who's the funniest guy on the team? I don't think anyone said another name other than Tyson Berry. Like, they love the guy, except maybe Michael McCarron. I think he said himself, but I think,
of course he did.
yeah, maybe he thought I said who's the sexiest guy on the team and then got confused. But yeah, so I think he's a great guy and the guys love him. And he is, it is unfortunate that he's kind of been dealt this hand. I still don't see him on the team beyond this year, but I think he, and certainly you don't wish injuries on this team. I mean, we've already seen an injury with Dante Fabro, which led to Stastny getting called up this morning. But if, you know, God forbid, if you have, you start having injury trouble on your blue line, then Tyson Berry is going to be a fantastic next man up to have in the playoffs or even before the playoffs. Again, we certainly hope that doesn't happen, but it's, you know, it's a decent situation for them to be in. But so that was the big one that didn't happen. Another
and
one.
Going back to that real quick before we move on.
Yeah.
To your point too, how many times have we seen where a player is very publicly, it's known they're unhappy with their situation, and then some of the other teammates get asked about it. And usually, like, the standard boilerplate answer is, well, if someone doesn't want to be here, then you know what? Maybe we start looking for people that do want to be here and stuff like that. No one ever really said anything about Tyson Berry. They all, I think I remember Roman Yoshi specifically saying, like, well, there's a business part of this, and this, unfortunately, is part of the business. And no one ever said anything bad about Tyson Berry, which I think shows me that it was more the agent than it was anything that Tyson did himself. And I feel like he's someone that now that he's here, I think Trotz is probably hyping him up a little bit. And I think Tyson Berry is also looking at it like the rest of the season is an audition for whatever team he plays for next year. And I think Trotz certainly doesn't want to hurt any kind of value that he has. So of course he's going to go out and say nice things about him because he genuinely wants the best for Tyson Berry. And I think that we talked about Stastny getting called up this morning. I think that's honestly a good thing for Berry because out of all the defensive partners that Stastny had, the 9 games he was playing in between November and December, he played a majority of his minutes with Tyson Berry, and they were a very effective defensive pairing. So I think if Fabro really is out for 2 or 3 weeks and Stastny is going to pretty much be here until the beginning of April, I wouldn't be surprised to see Stastny and Berry reunited because they were a very effective pairing. So again, not that you wish injuries on anybody, but Fabro being injured might actually be a blessing in disguise for Tyson Berry because he's probably going to end up playing with Stastny if that's the case. And like I said, they played really well together. So this could be something that helps Tyson Berry in the long run.
But then that, of course, means are we going to see Luke Shen get benched? Maybe, hopefully. But
if you're trying to make the playoffs and you're trying to be a serious team, and I know if you make the playoffs, like the goal is to win. If that really is your goal and it's not about the optics of a free agent contract, then Luke Shen probably needs to be benched.
I agree. But, you know, Barry Trotz loves him some Luke Shen. but I want to talk also about another trade that looked like it could happen. Maybe it didn't seem as certain as the Tyson Berry one. And by the way, last thing I'll say about Tyson Berry, and then we will move on. Trotz did say that, you know, they exhausted all of their options. I think what happened is that, you know, the agent got them into this mess. He did try to get him out of it. The agent was making all kinds of calls, and Trotz said he knew that because he was getting calls from other teams. They were trying to work something out, and it just didn't happen. And so I think that, you know, it's not to say that they just gave up on him. I think they just, timing is everything, and I think the circumstances just weren't right for him. But okay,
I think with that, what I heard talking to a couple people is that other GMs were trying to leverage the situation because Barry Trotz really had no leverage. And I feel like piecing together just from things that I've heard, that I feel like teams were probably lowballing Trotz. And Trotz even said from the very beginning, we're not going to give Tyson Berry away. He's still a really good defenseman. You're not going to get him for nothing just because it looks like he has no leverage. So I think that's probably what happened is teams thought that Trotz was the one who needed to get rid of this guy. And I think Barry, if you know Barry, you've talked to him for any amount of time, like he's not going to be bullied into doing something. Even if you don't agree with what he's doing or not doing, like he's not going to be bullied into it just because people think that they can. So
especially as a rookie GM, you know, he's got to kind of set his reputation and make sure that he doesn't get taken advantage of. So
absolutely.
I
think he had offers on the table. None of them were beneficial to the Predators because they were, like I said, they were probably lowball offers because everyone thought that Tyson Berry had the leverage and not Barry Trotz.
Right. Because Tyson Berry does not, like, he's not dead weight. He doesn't make the Predators a worse team. So it's not like, oh God, we need to get rid of him, you know? And I think, again, with an eye to the future, I'm sure if someone tried to offer him, you know, a 6-round pick for Tyson Barry, he's going to say, well, no, because that's, you know, that this player still has more value than that. But okay, for real, moving on from Tyson Barry, another trade that we thought was going to happen, or maybe had a strong potential to happen, just because of how much we saw his name floating around in the rumors, Alex Carrier did not get moved. Again, I think that one was sort of going back to what Trotz had said months ago, was that he was going to let this team decide or dictate the way he acted at the trade deadline. I think had this team not been on this now 12-point streak that they're on, if they hadn't gone on this tear, I don't think Carrier is still with this team right now. But I think that, you know, they went out, they made a statement, and Barry Trotz even said, I had to honor that. You know, they spoke loud and clear, spoke rhetorically with their performance on the ice. But I think, you know, that and that for him, I'm sure that only increased Carrier's trade value, which was already pretty high from what we knew. But I think, again, kind of going back to what we were saying before, Trotz was not going to trade Carrier for anything. You know, he set the price for him, whatever that was, and he wasn't going to accept anything lower than that because this team is not in full sell mode. So, I mean, what do you think? Do you think that's a pretty fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, Alex Carrier is a very valuable defenseman. It's not like we're talking about, I don't want to keep picking on Luke Shen, but it's not like we're talking about Luke Shen.
Keep picking on Luke Shen. Yeah. It's fine.
The reason that we heard Elliot Friedman and Pierre LeBrun and Chris Johnson and pretty much every national insider say there's a lot of buzz around Alex Carrier. Usually players that suck, there's not a lot of buzz around them because not a lot of people want to trade for him. So I don't know which team specifically called, but I did hear that there were a bunch of teams that were calling on Alex Carrier. And I feel like it's the same thing with Tyson Barry. Trotz wasn't going to give him away. Sure, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the summer, at the end of the year. You don't know what the contract status is, but if the best offer you got is a 4th-round pick for Alex Carrier, I would probably turn that down too, because he's worth way more than that. If you are going to make it into the playoffs, which we think they are, he's going to be valuable. He's playing with Jeremy Lozon. They're one of the best defensive pairings for this team. He kills penalties. He can give you offense. I feel like Alex Carrier can play up and down the defensive pairings of pretty much anybody you put him with. And I feel like that's a very underrated quality in a defenseman, especially if you're in a playoff chase. So I'm surprised. Well, I am, and I'm not surprised that he's still on the roster. I thought he would have been traded because I feel like he's so valuable to a contending team that someone would have offered him a 2nd-round pick or whatever the value is that Trotz had in his head for him. But I'm not surprised he's still on the roster, because one thing we know about Barry Trotz, he really values defensemen and goaltending. And Alex Carrier is a really good defenseman. So I feel like if you're going to make a run at the playoffs, you kind of need Alex Carrier. And now, especially with Fabro being out, the timetable is 2 to 3 weeks. That could very well trail into the end of the season. So now it's looking like it was a good idea that Trotz kind of held on to him.
Yeah. And I think with, you know, again, talking about, we don't know what the offers were. We don't know who the teams were. But I mean, I think it's kind of one of those situational things. If you get something like what Tampa offered for Tanner Janot last season for Alex Carrier, maybe you take that deal. But I think, like you said, Trotz knew his player's value and he was not going to accept any less than that, because again, they're not in full sell mode right now. And so I think it's good. Like you said, I think Carrier being paired with Lozon, they're a fantastic pair. They complement each other very well. They're extremely different, different in stature for one thing, but otherwise, you know, they are Andrew Brunette has called them besties because they do everything together, and, you know, they have a ton of chemistry, and that's made them such an effective pairing. And look, too, Lozon is having a career year. I mean, he's about to break an NHL record in hits. And so I think that he is going to, you know, I'm not saying that's all due to who his defensive partner is. But again, whatever you can do to kind of keep the status quo, because the status quo right now is actually very good. So you really don't want to do too much to mess with that. So I'm okay with that move. I think Trotz did say that they were still talking about the potential for a contract extension with Carrier after this year. It's still on the table. It didn't sound at the time. Now, this was at his press conference on deadline day. It didn't sound at the time like they were especially close or that anything was necessarily imminent, but he definitely made it clear that that option is still on the table. So who knows? You know, we see what happens. Maybe he does sign a team-friendly deal in the offseason and sticks around. You know, there's certainly that possibility. So
and I think the difference between Carrier and Trennan wasn't going to sign, which is why you saw him get moved, because Barry Trotz was kind of like what he said about Novak. I don't want to risk losing him for nothing at the end of the year, so I would trade him. I think that's why, because I heard that Trennan, they were far apart in negotiations, and Trennan wanted more money than what they were willing to pay. And I think Trennan probably wanted a bigger role than just being the fourth line guy that just goes out and hits people.
Yeah.
And to your point, I think the potential to get a deal done with Carrier is probably closer than it was with Trennan. So I think that's a gamble Trotz is willing to take, because at this point he knows what Carrier wants, because they've talked about an extension. So I think over the next 3-4 weeks, however long it is to the end of the season, Barry Trotz has time to talk himself into paying Carrier what he wants, whereas at the deadline he wasn't quite there.
And maybe it takes a little bit of the pressure off of Carrier. You know, you don't know what he was dealing with. Obviously these guys know when their names are being floated out in the trade rumors, and you know, media were asking Carrier every day at the rinks. It's like, so how's it feel to know you might not be here tomorrow? And like, that's gotta suck as a player, or as a human being, to know, you know, just to deal with questions like that. Now he can at least, you know, kind of take a breath and be like, all right, I'm here. And then now he can really focus. And like you said, the rest of the season is kind of going to be like an audition for him to say, okay, like, if I want X amount on my next contract, now I have to earn it. This is when I'm going to do it. And he can certainly do that by helping them in a playoff run.
And he can also, I mean, if they make a playoff run and say Saros steals a first round series and they somehow get into the second round, I wouldn't put it past Carrier to have a kind of playoff run similar to what Ryan Ellis had in 2016, 17, somewhere in there, the year before he got his contract extension. Like, right now, it's looking like Carrier is not going to be a part of this team. But if he goes and has one hell of a playoff run and he shows Trotz like, hey, I am well worth whatever I'm asking, I wouldn't put it past him to sign him to a 3 or 4 year contract extension.
He also blocks, I don't have it in front of me, but he blocks a lot of shots, which obviously as a defenseman, that's your job. But I mean, he is up there. He was one or two on the Predators in block shots this year, which I think is kind of a stat that maybe goes overlooked. But I think, you know, for such a little guy too, I mean, little is relative because they're all bigger than me, but you know,
he actually
little
leads the team in block shots. He's there, 100, okay. 121. He's got 6 more than Roman Josi.
Yeah. So I think like that's incredibly valuable, especially if you talk about what we've talked about earlier in the year when UC Saros was maybe not quite at his best, or, you know, the goaltending is not at its best, that, you know, that plays into it too. So that I think is going to be really valuable for them. So last guy who we thought would probably, well, maybe not probably, but we thought there was a decent chance that he would get traded, Kevin Lankinen, backup goalie. He didn't get moved either. Obviously, we have talked at length about the Predators goaltending situation here, so we don't need to rehash all of it. Just with the knowledge that Saros still has a year on his contract, we already knew that he wasn't going anywhere at the deadline because Trotz kind of said as much about a week earlier. He said, yeah, we're set on keeping him because we're trying to make the playoffs now, and it looks like we will. And so Saros is staying. You know, you have Askarov down in Milwaukee. Keeping Lankinen, who's on an expiring deal, you know, he's an incredibly valuable backup goalie. I think he's more than earned his shot as a starter. Obviously, he's not going to get it here in Nashville, but maybe, you know, next year, maybe he gets a better deal somewhere else. But he's also been part of this point streak that they're on. I mean, he's been undefeated during this as well. So I think, again, back to the point of you don't want to mess with what you have. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I think for right now, that was maybe a move, and Mike, tell me if you disagree, but a move that was less focused on the future and more on the present, and like, hey, let's see what happens. Let's see what we can do here.
Yeah, I'm honestly surprised that Lankinen didn't get moved, just for the simple fact that, I mean, Philip Forsberg and some of the other players have been hyping him up. They're like, yeah, he's a starting goaltender in this league. And he even said himself that he has higher aspirations. He wants to be a starting goaltender again. And just looking at some of the teams, I mean, whether every team that was linked to a goaltender or was reportedly looking for a goaltender, whether they actually were or not, probably isn't true. Like, I think the Kings probably were. I think Jersey definitely was because they traded for Jake Allen. And the Devils are in a weird spot where they're technically out of the playoffs, probably aren't going to make it, but there's still that slight small chance that they could, especially with the roster that they have with guys like Hughes and Bratt and Heischer and Meyer and just the scoring punch and Dylan Mercer and Dawson Mercer, sorry, and some of those guys. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if they went on a run and won 10 of 12 and somehow ended up getting into the playoffs. But just maybe this is just me, maybe because I watched Kevin Lankinen and I've covered him the last 2 years. But if I'm the Devils and I'm going into a playoff series, I would rather have Kevin Lankinen as my starter than Jake Allen. And I know that Jake Allen wasn't brought in to be the guy. He's probably going to split some time with who's the guy they have? Dawes, I
Nico
believe.
Dawes, yeah.
Yeah, and Schmid they have there too. I think they traded for Kakinen or whatever. I don't know how to say his name. But yeah, they have a hodgepodge of goaltending, basically. I feel like out of all those guys that they have on the roster now, Kevin Lankinen is probably a model of stability compared to everyone else they have. And
Well, because that's what they did. They stockpiled. They're like, let's just get everything that we
yeah.
can and try to cobble something together and just throw
Surely
it
one
out
of these
there.
17 goaltenders
Yeah.
will give us a good start here and there.
Exactly.
And it was, I believe it was a conditional third round pick that they sent to Montreal that can become a second rounder depending on how many games Allen plays. Like, that is a very enticing deal if I'm Barry Trotz, especially since you're looking at probably Lankinen is going to walk in free agency. And unless there's just nobody biting on giving him a shot to start next year, which I don't see because there's so many teams that have goaltending needs. I mean, there's a possibility he's brought back on another team friendly deal, but I'm thinking Lankinen's walking in the offseason, you're going to lose him for nothing. And maybe Trotz is okay with that. Maybe because it's one of those things where he didn't get the value that he thought was fair, and he's not going to make a deal just because he might lose the guy. There's always the chance that he'll come back. I mean, we saw it with Mikael Granlund a couple of years ago, where he left in free agency, thought he was gone, and then he comes back and he signs for a really cheap deal, and everyone's surprised that he's back. Maybe that happens. I don't see that happening, but yeah, I was surprised Lankinen didn't get moved, especially because Jersey was really, really desperate for a goaltender, and you have a pretty good one right there that you put him in Jersey with that offense. Not that the Predators have a bad offense, but New Jersey obviously has a lot more offensive players to work with. I feel like that would have been a great situation for not only for Lankinen but for the Devils as well. But I think Tom Fitzgerald was a little bit salty because we saw what he said about other teams, and it wasn't directed at Barry Trotz. I'm sure it was all the other teams he spoke to about goaltenders, more probably directed at Calgary for the Jacob Markstrom deal that kind of fell through. But we saw how salty he was, that he thought he was trying to get fleeced for everything. And I think that's why he probably took the conservative route and went with Jake Allen. But if I was Fitzgerald, I would have rather had Kevin Lankinen, but that's just me.
Yeah, I said the same thing, and I was just going to bring that up, what Fitzgerald said afterwards about how general managers had set the market so high. And I think that, part of me wonders too, and this is pure speculation, but maybe, if he had, I'm sure he had talked about Saros. They had talked that had been out there, that the Devils had been asking about Saros, and maybe there's some saltiness there because Barry said no, absolutely not. So I think there's yeah, it's I agree that I think Kevin Lankinen would have been a great fit in New Jersey, but he's here. He's here for the rest of the year, and then we'll see what happens. So, like we said, deals that didn't happen, Tyson Barrie, Alex Carrier, Kevin Lankinen, they're all sticking around, all to help this team continue, hopefully, what has been a very successful run. 12 game point streak, 10 wins and 2 overtime losses. Obviously, the last overtime loss came in a very interesting fashion against the Minnesota Wild, and we'll get to that in a second. But Mike, just wanted to get your thoughts kind of on how, I mean, obviously we've been talking about this streak for weeks now because that's how long it's been going on, but just what has been going right for this team? What's been going well, and how have they been able to kind of keep this going?
Yeah, I mean, basically since the All-Star break, they're 11-2-2, which is kind of surprising considering how bad they played kind of limping into that All-Star break. And the two over or the two regulation losses were the bad loss to New Jersey and obviously the embarrassing blowout to Dallas. You're looking at the Montreal overtime loss that probably should have been a win. I feel like the Predators kind of, I feel like they controlled the game for the most part and just kind of got a few bad breaks. And you look at Minnesota, where kind of the same thing. I feel like they were pretty good for most of the game, and then you get into overtime and John Hines with the biggest fuck you old employer I've ever seen with pulling the goalie in OT, which was, and again, I'm not a big John Hines fan. I don't really think he's that great of a coach. I think he's a solid coach, but
I was gonna say noted John Hines
yeah.
stan Michael Gallagher.
And the fact that he pulls a goalie, I wonder if he actually knew that if he pulled the goalie and they lost, like he wouldn't get any points. I wonder how many, like, I'm sure some head coaches actually know, but I wonder how many people actually didn't know that that was a rule. But yeah, very ballsy move. It worked out for him. And of course, it was against his old team and the kind of revenge factor there. But I mean, you're talking basically since that Dallas loss, you've won. What is it, 10 games and your two losses are overtime games? Like, this is probably the hottest that this team has been. And I'm including at the beginning of the year or mid-November to early mid-December when they went on that really long streak as well. I mean, Saros has figured it out. Lankanen's played really well. Roman Josi has stepped up, and in my opinion, I feel like he's worked his way into the Norris Trophy conversation. I mean, you look at guys like Sherwood and Cole Smith and Michael McCarron, like that, how good is that line, Ben? I mean, I know we talked about the identity line and how it was the herd line before, and then kind of how it's been Sissons and Trennan and whoever you kind of put on there, and Tanner Janot was on there, and Matthew Olivier and some other guys. That is kind of the new identity line. Like, that's been the line that's, when there's been some adversity that Brunette's thrown out there, it's kind of settled things down. You look at some of the depth scoring that's been going on, and of course the top line with Forsberg and O'Reilly and Nyquist, like they just, it seems like they can't be stopped. They're putting up points in bunches. And I feel like it's just an instance where everything that has to go right for the team pretty much has gone right for them. Obviously, you'd like the Minnesota game back and the way that ended it against John Hines. But I mean, for the most part, they're clicking on all cylinders. And I don't want to jinx it or say that, like, I feel like this is sustainable for the rest of the year, because obviously, I mean, you have Winnipeg on Wednesday and then you have, Florida after that and Vegas and Colorado, and you have some pretty good teams left on your schedule. But I feel like if this is who the Predators are and this is how they can play for the most part through the rest of the year, like they're going to be a tougher out in the playoffs than we probably initially thought.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about that identity line too. I mean, before it was, oh, the identity line, because they're big and they're scary and they're hard to play against and they're hard to muscle around. It's like, okay, now we have that and they're scoring too. Like, that's great. You know, you talk about the depth scoring, that's a huge, they've been a huge part of that. And like you said, that top line, especially in the overtime loss to Montreal, which I agree probably should have been a win. We saw, I will say, you know, we don't want to overreact to that, but it was a little bit like, ooh, that top line carried the Preds through that game. And that they're the ones who made it as close as it was. And so you kind of see that, okay, even if there are these instances where the depth scoring just isn't there for whatever reason, you can always rely on that top trio to get it done, especially Ryan O'Reilly. My God, like that man never gives up on a play. And so I feel like so many of his goals this year have come off of, like, it seems like the fourth or fifth rebound, because he's just there, just like hammering it in front of the net and trying to make sure it goes in, and he's not gonna give up on a play. So that's been something that, you know, has been great to see for this team. Obviously, yeah, the loss to Minnesota. I will say, I wrote about this over at Heavy on Sports, brand new NHL vertical launched by yours truly. So go check it out. But I wrote about this yesterday with John Hines and the very risky, gutsy move that he pulled at the end there. I will say, I watched his post-game press conference. It certainly seemed like he knew that he was aware of the rule. Now, what's funny is it also seemed most of the players had no idea, and they didn't realize until afterwards. And I think it Boldy, who scored the goal, said, "Oh, I didn't realize that. Well, it's a good thing we scored then." it was kind of funny. And even today at Predators practice, Andrew Brunette was asked about it, and you know, asked kind of, "Did you expect that? Did you, you know?" Which I don't think anyone really expects that. But he was like, "Well, no. Initially, I thought maybe Fleury was just coming out to play the puck. He does that sometimes. You know, you never know." And so I think, I'm sure it probably threw a lot of people off. But you know, it was pretty cool. It was for sure a desperation move by Hines, because they're kind of, Minnesota's in a situation too that's kind of similar to New Jersey, like you were saying earlier, where they're out of the playoffs right now. They probably won't make it in, but it's not technically out of the question yet. You know, they still could. And so that's kind of what Hines said in his press conference. He was like, "Well, we're here to win, right? I mean, we needed 2 points. One wasn't going to be enough, especially when the Predators are one of the teams that they're chasing in the standings." And so I think that it was a desperation move by him. I think it was very gutsy. Now, I think Predators fans, well, really the whole hockey world in general, would probably be having a very different conversation about this had it not worked out and had the Predators scored, and then Minnesota would have gotten 0 points. I'm sure Preds fans and John Hines lovers like you, Mike, would have had a lot of fun with that.
You would have heard typical John Hines. This is why he was fired.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I will say, if you're going to crap on him for all the things he did wrong here, which there were a lot, you got to give the man credit when he does something good. And that move was bold, whether he knew about it or not, getting no points if they would have lost. It was bold. And I love his reasoning when he was asked about, like, why did you do it? And he's like, "Well, basic math tells you 2 points is better than 1 point." Like, I mean, when you're in a situation like Minnesota is, and you need all the points you can, why not go for it? If you lose and you get 0 points out of it, then you know what? You're in the exact same spot you were. If you take a move like that and it works, you gain 2 points in the standings. Oh, and by the way, the Predators are one of the teams you're chasing in the standings. So I thought it was a great move. I don't give John Hines credit a lot, but I will give him credit for that. Like, I probably wouldn't have done that if I was a coach, but that was a ballsy move.
Wow. Breaking news. Michael Gallagher gives John Hines credit for something. Okay, so we talked about that. We don't need to, you know, belabor that anymore. It's still good. The Preds still did get a point. You know, their points weren't affected by the gutsy move. They still get 1 point in the loss. So the point streak lives on. They're headed, like you said, into another division game on the road against Winnipeg. But one thing we did see, and we mentioned this briefly earlier in the show, but one thing that we did see in the loss to Minnesota, Dante Fabbro, I think, only played about, it was a little over 3 minutes in the first period of that game. And then he left and he did not take a shift the rest of the game. We all kind of figured something was up. And then we get the announcement today about Spencer Stastny getting recalled. Fabbro's out 2 to 3 weeks with an upper body injury, I believe. And so now, you know, again, it's good, like you said, for Stastny to come up. I think he's more than ready. Could be a good thing potentially for Tyson Barrie too. But looking at what Stastny did, you know, this will be the second time that he was called up. He was called up back in November as well for, I think, 9 games he spent up here before he was sent back down. And so I think that, you know, he scored his first goal in St. Louis, and that was great. But I think the Preds are going to be looking from him. They're going to be looking for a lot of the same, like a lot of what they saw from him last time. I think it's nothing like, oh, he had to go down and work on some things. It was just purely a numbers thing. They just didn't have room for him. They didn't have need for him on the roster at the NHL level. And that was when we were still dealing with the injury to everyone's favorite defenseman, Luke Shen. But I think that now coming back, you know, it's a chance for him to really show what he can do. And, you know, he was one of the guys that helped this team down the stretch last year when they almost made the playoffs with basically an AHL roster. So I know that you've been a proponent for calling him up and, you know, getting him the minutes and, you know, maybe not quite to Igor Afanasyev levels of a proponent, but I know you...
That's a high bar to clear.
Yes, yes. So I just wanted to get your thoughts. You know, I'm sure they're positive, but, you know, as far as what this call-up means, you know, where you see him slotting in, let's say if Tyson Barrie does not come back into the lineup, and just how he can help this team down the stretch.
Yeah, I think it's interesting where Stastny plays, because obviously Fabro was paired with Yossi and they were a pretty effective pairing. I think in his nine game call up before, which during that time the Predators were 8-1 with him in the lineup. So that is an underrated stat, is Spencer Stastny, when he's in the lineup, the Predators win a lot of games. But when he was up during the 9-game stretch, I think he played with Roman Yossi the second most behind Tyson Barrie. Granted, it was only like 8.5 minutes, but he played with Roman Yossi more than any other defenseman besides Tyson Barrie. So I wouldn't be surprised if they just put him in Fabro's old spot and they let him play there. Because otherwise, you're probably not going to break up the Lauzon Carrier pairing. Like they've been really good. You can maybe put him with Tyson Barrie, but again, like where are you? If you do that, then that's telling me you're probably going to put McDonough and Yossi together. You're going to have Lauzon and Carrier and then Barrie and Stastny. And then Shen is the odd man out, which I'm okay with that. I just don't think Barrie Trotz is okay with that, because he made a big fuss about signing Luke Shen in the offseason and how he's a valuable part of the team. So yeah, I'm curious to see where they put him. But I do, when I watch Spencer Stastny, I'm watching an NHL ready defenseman. When he was on the team for those 9 games, he was second in shots blocked per 60, penalties drawn per 60. What else was there? There was a couple other stats where he was like at the top compared to everyone else. And I feel like Andrew Burnett even gave him high praise. He said that he loved his mobility. He said that the way he can break a puck out by himself and his skating ability is elite, which you don't really hear NHL head coaches talk about a prospect and say any part of their game is elite. That's very rare to hear that. But the fact that he talked about Stastny and how he likes the way he can move around, I think that's very valuable, especially in Andrew Burnett's system, because we've talked about this, you know, all season long. It's predicated on speed, on pace, on tempo, on creating spaces and shots and from different angles and stuff. You need a guy that can move all over the ice, and Spencer Stastny does that. So yeah, I think he's going to be a good addition. And like, well, it's not published yet, but Clay Brewer is writing a story for Nashville Hockey Now explaining kind of some of the roster moves and stuff after the deadline. The Predators only have 4 call-ups that they can use, as does every other NHL team, but they only have 4 call-ups they can use for the rest of the year. They used one of them on Spencer Stastny today, and we're talking, what, 2 days, 3 days after the trade deadline. So they have 3 more call-ups. They can send him back down, but if they call him back up again, that counts as a separate call-up too. So I think the fact they called him up now, he's on the roster for the rest of the year, whether Fabro comes back in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, because now the 23-man roster limit has been lifted. You can have Stastny and Fabro both on the roster. You can carry 8 defensemen, 9 defensemen if you want. I think this move was made because Stastny's on the roster for the rest of the year. And it's something Barrie Trotz has talked about. He even said, I feel like he kind of foreshadowed a little bit. He's like, I would love to have Stastny on the roster. We just haven't had any injuries. Well, a week later, Fabro gets injured. Stastny's on the roster. I think this is kind of an audition for Stastny too. Like, you have 20 games or 18 games or however many it is to go out there and prove that you belong on this roster. Because if he does that, then you're looking at Barrie Trotz next year. You're going to have Shen, you're going to have Fabro, you're going to have Carrier all basically vying for 2 spots, because we all don't think Tyson Barrie's coming back, but you have 2 spots for 3 defensemen. Like, this could be Stastny's opportunity to go out and take a spot away from Fabro or from Carrier or whoever.
Well, now that you've drawn that dotted line, we're going to have all the conspiracy theorists now about, oh, Barrie Trotz paid someone off to injure Dante Fabro just so that Spencer Stastny could come up. But no, I agree.
If you're going to pay someone to injure someone, it would be Luke Shen.
Yes. Well, and we did get, what, a month or more than a month of no Luke Shen. That was lovely, but oh well. Again, back to what you were saying, I would love that those pairings that you laid out for Yossi or to have Yossi and Fabbro, Lauzon, Carrier, or I'm sorry, Yossi, McDonough, Lauzon, Carrier, and then Barry and Stastny. Bye,
Luke Shen. I feel like those make the most sense. Yeah.
Yeah, like bye.
But as we've seen, the lineups or the combinations that make the most sense, they usually try to stay away from, and they just go with random crap. So
yeah, well, Luke Shen is making a lot of money, and it's, you don't want to pay him that much to sit on the bench, which that's where the business side comes from, I understand, but it's tough. I know that he and McDonough also are really, they're very good friends. They play together in Tampa. They're very close. And they, you know, McDonough and Shen has said this, that McDonough was factored heavily into his decision to sign with Nashville, which is great. But I also think that him being paired with McDonough, I think McDonough has almost covered up. I mean, not for us because we're out here airing all of our grievances, but I think in a way that McDonough has maybe covered up how bad Luke Shen has been for this team, just because McDonough is really good. But I, you know, it is what it is. I think that that's maybe, you know what, Barry Trotz, look at your first free agency. You had two huge wins, O'Reilly and Nyquist. I mean, that top line is unreal. So like, we'll give you the L on Luke Shen. That's okay. You got two.
As a first year GM, it's okay to admit you made a mistake. I mean, yeah, it's fine. And you know what? If the Flyers buy out Ryan Johansson, the Predators will actually save around $2.6 million on the money they owe him on retention. Take that savings and buy out Luke Shen.
Yeah. It's like, makes perfect sense, which means it won't happen, like you said, but yeah, we can dream.
Or if you can find another GM that's dumb enough to take on that contract in a trade, by all means do it. But I just, I can't see a world, given the defenseman.
If they couldn't find a GM to take on Tyson Barrie, then I doubt they're going to find someone who can take on Luke Shen.
Well, I think the difference is Tyson Barrie's worth a third round pick, maybe a little bit more. Luke Shen's value is probably sixth, seventh round, somewhere in that range, if at all. But if you can find a GM that's willing to take on Luke Shen, by all means do it. Because I can't see a world where he's on this roster next year, given the defenseman you have, the prospects that you have in the pipeline. Like, I think Stastny and Ogazzo both right now are better than Luke Shen is. I just can't see him taking a roster spot from one or both of those guys next year. Doesn't make sense to me.
He's slow. He makes a lot of mistakes. I mean, yeah, he's big and he hits people. And that was kind of what Barry Trotz was touting about him when he decided to sign him in the offseason last year. And he kept talking about how he coached against him in the playoffs when he was coaching the Islanders, and how Shen kept getting under their skin, and how he was just a pest to play against. And I'm watching him now and I'm like, really, this guy? Like, it just doesn't make sense.
You have Jeremy Lauzon for that now.
Well, and that is where I was going with that, is I don't think anyone anticipated the season that Jeremy Lauzon was going to have. And I mean, not even, it doesn't even seem fluky to me. He's gotten consistently better. And so I think
the now hell that Preds Twitter raised when they gave up a second round pick for him and then extended him for 4 years. Now, yeah, I'm not saying he's a top pairing defenseman, but now it looks kind of foolish because he's about to set the NHL hits record.
He's an incredibly valuable piece of this team. And it's so funny to me. I enjoy this so much watching him. I think it was during, I mean, it happens every game, but I noticed it specifically during the Montreal game. The absolute speed, urgency, and terror with which opposing players will get the hell out of his way every time he comes to their end of the ice is really something to behold. I mean, it's kind of funny. I mean, and Lauzon has said he knows it too. He knows he has kind of a reputation that guys don't really want him to come to their side, and that's good. He's a guy who's tough to play against, which is what this team is supposed to be all about. But it is just so funny to me, especially with such a young team like Montreal, just to see the eyes like saucers and guys just getting the hell out of Lauzon's way. You know, I think that that's, yeah, like you said, maybe not a top pairing defenseman, but he is an incredibly valuable piece to this team right now. Way more valuable than Luke Shen.
I feel like when opposing skaters see Lauzon coming at them, it kind of reminds me of like early 2012-13 when Brian McGrattan was a part of this team. He was someone you did not want to get hit by. He was someone you did not want to get into a fight with. And I feel like skaters kind of have that same terror when they see Lozon coming, because you know you're going to get hit. Like, you knew if Brian McGrattan was skating at you, like, you were going to get hit. And I feel like that's kind of what Lozon's doing right now. And the fact that he's doing it playing with Alex Carrier, who's not really a physical defenseman, like we talked about, he leads the team in block shots, but he's way down at the bottom in hits. I feel like it's kind of funny knowing that, like, he's paired with someone who's kind of like the anti-Lozon. Like, Alex Carrier will hit you if he has to, but he'd rather not.
Which is funny, because I think we'll all remember last year when Alex Carrier ended up on injured reserve because he tried to fight a guy that was like twice his size at least. And I've asked him about that recently. I mean, even in the last couple weeks, and he was like, he kind of gestures over at Lozon and says, yeah, I'll let him fight for me next time. It's like, yeah, good idea. Okay. So big test against Winnipeg on Wednesday night on the road. Has not gone well for this team the last time that they played against Winnipeg. So what do we need to see? You know, do prediction time. Do we think the point streak ends? Do we think that they find a way to pull it out? What are our thoughts here?
Yeah, I'm kind of torn, because the last time they played them was at the end of November and they won 3-2. They kind of squeaked that one out. They played them 2 weeks before that and they lost 6-3. And up until that point, that was probably maybe their worst loss of the year. I think they had a 6-1 loss to Edmonton, but it was one of their worst two losses of the year at that point. Granted, they were 3 weeks into the season.
And I was there and can say that was one of the worst plane rides I've ever been on with that team. After that loss, that trip, that was a rough one. So that one sticks in my mind. When I say things didn't go well, that's what I'm referring to, is the loss in Winnipeg.
Yeah, and you're going up against a team that has, you know, a pretty good offense, but Kyle Connor and Morrissey and Scheifele and Ehlers and Nino Niederreiter and Perfetti, and like the list goes on and on. And I don't know. I feel like the Predators could probably squeak out a 2-1 win, but at the same time, I feel like this is more like a 5-2 loss, just because Winnipeg has so much offensive firepower. UC Saros has been hot, so it wouldn't surprise me if they went out there and that it was a low scoring game. But I don't know, something, I just get bad vibes thinking about this game. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if this was a regulation loss.
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree with you on that. I mean, I'd love to be wrong about that. But I think, you know, it goes back to what I said before. I think this is a very big test. Not to say that they haven't faced big tests throughout this streak. I mean, Colorado and even Minnesota, but you know, Vegas, teams that, you know, were obviously big tests and opponents that should have probably beaten them, and they haven't. So I would agree with you, though. I really do kind of put Winnipeg on another level just with what they have. I mean, they have all the offense that you just mentioned. They've also got Connor Hellebuck, which is about as close. I mean, he is always kind of right up there with UC Saros in terms of performance, and he's been incredible for them as well.
I think they're the two most used goaltenders since like 2018.
Well, yeah. I mean, it doesn't surprise me.
I will say, if you're going to play Winnipeg and you want to get Connor Hellebuck off his game, now is probably the time to do it, because he was lights out from the beginning of the year up until, I would say, mid-February-ish. He's given up 3 goals or more in, what, 5 of his last 6 games. So if you're going to capitalize on Winnipeg, quote-unquote, being in a little bit of a slump, now is probably the time to do it, because Hellebuck hasn't had a great run the last week and a half.
All right. We need that Philip Forsberg, Gus Nyquist, Ryan O'Reilly line to step up. Or maybe we get the McCarron line going too, and they score, you know, and they end up winning 6-2. Who knows?
Maybe there's a surprise Zucker hat trick somewhere. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe something crazy happens. Maybe one of the new guys goes out there and does something.
Jarrett Anderson Dolan plays his first game as a Pred, scores a hat trick, wins it against Winnipeg.
That would be great for Predators fans. I know, look, Anderson Dolan was a second round pick. He's got the potential. I think it's the same thing with Fagimo. He's got that goal scoring potential. and the Fagimo thing didn't work out. Liam Foudy, I think the jury's still out. He's having a pretty good year in Milwaukee. But I think once Anderson Dolan gets into the lineup, I think then that's when things will start to get interesting, because he's a center. He was a highly regarded center prospect a couple of years ago. So I think that's something to watch out for, too. Maybe he's someone who goes out there and gets into the lineup and actually does something.
Yeah, and talking about centers, have to mention Cody Glass has been the healthy scratch, although he hasn't been playing center lately, much to our happiness. But he has been the odd man out the last two games since the new guys, Zucker and Beauvillier, came in after the trade deadline. People, of course, on Preds Twitter, as they tend to do, have had very normal and healthy reactions to this. I do see it. I understand, you know, the kid has had a rough year. He was finally getting things on track, it looked like. I mean, he had a hat trick last week, and it's great. It's great for him. You think like, okay, this is good. This kid's getting his mojo back, especially for a kid who has, I don't want to say fragile mental fortitude, because that's not really fair to say, but it's something that has definitely affected him before. So when you see him getting this confidence and actually playing well, you say, you know, you don't want to mess with it. At the same time, though, I understand you've got two new guys who have been brought in theoretically to help with this push down the stretch and into the playoffs. You've already talked, I mean, Brunette has talked about, you don't want to mess with the lineup. That's been the easiest part of his job during this whole thing, because if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So he's not going to mess with that. But you have to a degree, to let these new guys in. You'd rather mess with one guy, or one line rather, than have to mess with two or three lines. So, you know, you've already got Trennan out the door in the trade to Colorado. So it does kind of make Glass the odd man out there. And I don't think it's a, I don't think it was an easy decision. I'm just trying to say, I think I get it. Like, I get that it had to be done. I'm not saying it stays that way forever and that Glass is on the bench the rest of the season. I just think for right now, I mean, if you look at all the options, there was no clear, easy option here with him. And I think that that was just kind of, they did the best they could.
Yeah, I will say to everyone that was complaining about this on Twitter, who are you taking out of the lineup that you're keeping Cody Glass in? You're not messing with the top line. You're not messing with the, yeah. You're not messing with the Smith, McCarron, Sherwood line. Jankowski has been pretty good as of late. Novak is hitting his stride. Luke Evangelista has goals in three straight games. Like, that line is
the meshing Jankowski, pretty well. The Jankowski Evangelista chemistry, especially over these last few games, has been so good. Like, it's been so fun to watch. So, like, again, don't
that line's gelling together. Like, Dennis Gurianov got traded, that leaves Sissons and Glass. Naturally, you're going to take Glass out and you're going to put Beauvillier and you're going to put Zucker in there and see what's going on. And if, you know what, if one or both of them starts sucking and they're not really doing anything, then you can slide Cody Glass back in there. And you can still, if you have to, you have Parson and Tomasino you can call up. You have Afanasyev you can call up. You have other guys, you have other options. And I think that was the point of it. Andrew Brunette knows what he has in Cody Glass, and I think he knows what Cody Glass can handle. And like I pointed out on Twitter, like, Cody Glass took a beating in that Buffalo game. Like, yeah. I'm not saying he's nursing an injury, but he was probably really sore. So I think it's okay to give the kid a couple games off, let him heal and rest up, especially everything he's been through this year. Try out some of the new guys, and if it doesn't work, maybe you take one of them out and put them back in there. Like, Cody Glass will be fine. The Predators will be fine. The lineup will be fine. Everyone can... Preds Twitter, Preds social media does not have to have this visceral reaction anytime a lineup decision is made that they don't agree with. It'll be okay.
Yes, they do. Otherwise, nothing in life makes sense anymore if Preds Twitter isn't having visceral reactions to decisions like that. But I agree.
At least it's Andrew Brunette making the decisions and not John Hines. Because if Hines is making these decisions, it would be way worse.
Yep, exactly. So... that's, you know, it's something to keep an eye on. You also mentioned, you know, he knows what he has in Cody Glass. You don't know necessarily what you have in the two new guys. I mean, yes, he coached Zucker as an assistant in Minnesota. Beauvillier's like been in the league for a while too. Trotz knows him. Trotz coached him. Like, that is not to say you have no idea what these guys bring to the table, but you also have to see how they fit into your roster, into the system. It was an opportunity. They come in and boom, right off the bat, you have back-to-back games. I mean, it's a good way for them to get in and kind of show okay, here's how they fit or don't fit. And so, again, we don't need to be overreacting to one or two games, but Preds Twitter will always be Preds Twitter, and we love them for it. Okay, so Michael, what do you mentioned the story from Clay coming up on Nashville Hockey Now. Do you guys have anything else going on over there?
Yeah, we got that story from Clay kind of breaking down where the Predators roster stands and some nuances of the CBA that affect contracts and stuff like that. And kind of, I think he said he threw a look ahead in there to some of the UFAs and RFAs and all that fun stuff. My day job has kept me busy, but I'm hoping to have some analysis and some feedback on some of the trade deadline moves and stuff and what's going on and just kind of dissecting what Barry Trotz has been up to. And of course, if anything breaking happens, any players get called up, whatever, we'll have some coverage of that as well. But yeah, pretty much just kind of recovering from the trade deadline, pretty much.
Yeah, I took my first workout class yesterday that I didn't have to bring my phone with me into the class since the trade deadline. It was such a nice freeing feeling. Again, I am over at heavy.com now covering just general NHL news if you want to read about what else is going on in the league outside of Nashville. But Pred specific over at the Hockey News, no longer the Hockey Writers. You can find me at the Hockey News, and I'm sure that I will make that slip up at some point. If it doesn't happen today, it'll be coming. At the Hockey News, you can get all kinds of, like you said, breaking news about call-ups. There's a story on there now about Stastny's call-up, stories about the contracts that were signed at the deadline, Jankowski and Fabro, and then as well as a couple reactions to trade deadline moves and what these new guys bring to the table. Have a piece on there that went up yesterday about Jeremy Hansel, the defensive prospect that they got from Colorado in return for Yakov Trenin. So a lot going on over there, and so definitely we have new content on there every day. So definitely good to go check it out. But in the
And fear
meantime,
not, Braden will be back next week.
yes, we have done our best, but we also understand that we are not Braden, and no one can replace Braden. But
No one's as charismatic as he is.
no. And no one likes to play devil's advocate as much as he is. I don't think either
Oh,
one of
yeah.
us is capable of that. We're just like, no, I have my opinions and I need to say them. So I think, I think we did okay here, but
Yeah.
we'll be happy to have Brayden back next week. But in the meantime, for Michael, I'm Emma. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.